Council President Cardoza.
Here.
Councilmember Jones.
Here.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhar.
Here.
Councilmember Steer.
Here.
Mayor Nelson.
Here. Thank you. And I see Pastor Randy Maxwell is here from the Seventh-day Adventists, and would you lead us in the invocation, please?
Sure. Please stand. Father in heaven, we thank you for a beautiful day and the beautiful weather that we've been having. And we just pray your blessing here on us tonight as we consider the city's business. Give us wisdom and understanding and also gratitude and thankfulness for where we live, for this country of ours, and for our freedoms. We thank you for this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. First item of business is the consent agenda. Are there any additions or corrections on the consent agenda?
Mayor, I have a couple questions. One, I have a legal question. So, Richard.
Okay.
I see here that we're reimbursing somebody to use a personal vehicle to deliver some documents. My concern, does that open up any additional liability if that person was involved in an accident in their personal vehicle compared to a company vehicle? And what I mean by that is more along the lines of they're upside down in their car, or they don't have a car for 2 weeks because it's in the shop getting fixed. Are we going to be responsible to pay for that additional difference in a rental car when we actually have company cars that they could use? I mean, is there any issues of concern there?
Yeah, potentially if you're in the scope of employment for the coverage issues. What I'm looking at right now in the revision of the personnel manual is if those cars are available. We have two here at City Hall utilizing those first, but you bring up a couple of good points about reimbursement and the scope of employment and coverage issues. Primarily, their auto insurance would cover things depending on their thing, but if the vehicle's totaled and there's some type of upside down claims, we might have some issues that we'll have to address.
Okay.
Certainly, that's the reason why we have the vehicles here. It's cheaper for us to let them use the vehicle than it is for us to pay 57 cents a mile to drive wherever they're driving to. So.
Okay, thank you. The other question I have, John, I'll probably need you to help me answer this. Where is it? I had a circle here. Under the miscellaneous vendors, we are looking to reimburse an employee, it looks like, for lunch and parking. Looks like one for $68 and another for $53. It looks like the lunch is $44. On one of them, and I'm even assuming if that's 2 days, $22 a day. And lunch on the other one is $31, and if you split that up 2 days, $15 a day. Am I reading that right? And
yes, Councilmember Jones, you are correct. I'm trying to grab the documentation for you here to get you an exact information. It's just kind of buried on me. Okay, so let's see. We've got two employees. Looks like two employees, each of them for 2 days. So the lunch is for each of 2 days. So on one of them, it's, looks like about $32 for 2 days, and the other one is about $36 for 2 days.
Okay. I just have some concerns with, that just seems extravagant for, to reimburse somebody for lunch. One, I think they should take care of their own lunch, but, you know, if they're outside of where they can't make their lunch or something like that, I understand that, but I just think that paying somebody $44 for 2 days of lunches is just, I'm not in favor of that. I just think that's too high.
Did we never come up with a policy? I could have sworn we talked about this at some point before, in terms of, like, do we have a policy where we lay out how far away a work detail has to be before you start earning per diem, essentially before you start getting meals and stuff paid for? Like, if it's outside the local commuting area, then meals would be paid for, just like lodging or anything. But if it's within the local commuting area, then it's a personal expense because it's, you know, did we ever come up with that? I feel like we talked about it before.
Councilmember Boobin Vonderhaar, I know, I recall what you're talking about there. We never did set anything going forward in writing, because at that point in time, the discussion was, and the reason for that is oftentimes when we don't have anything written, these kind of things, we bounce off the way the IRS handles it. And so the IRS used to look at a distance away from your home base, your home work base, as far as their justification for whether you can write off an unreimbursed employee business expense. They've since changed that to their mechanism is whether or not you're at an overnight stay. And that's kind of the catalyst for whether or not you have a reimbursable expense, an unreimbursed expense that you can deduct on your taxes. So we didn't progress from that point as far as anything in writing. I know there was some discussion on it, but nothing progressed beyond there. And so at this point, there's still nothing that dictates exactly how it works, other than maybe a precedent.
That's one of them, Brianna, that I'm working on. I already called two of our employees in and went over the lunches. You know, a reasonable lunch is what we expect. And the one I called them in on wasn't this one, because this one is just going through now, but it was $20 and $24. And, you know, there are times you're at a conference and the meal is served you there, and you end up having to pay whatever they, as a part of the conference. Mm-hmm. But most generally, you're given at least some time to go out and you know, the oftentimes, and there were some misunderstandings by at least one of those employees, so I had concluded we had to put that in writing. We've got three different policies I'm working on now, but I've got to get past the state of the city.
Oh, sure. Well, and we, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel on this either. If we wanted to, like, look at, for example, what the federal government does in terms of, I'm fairly confident, you know, if you were actually in like a travel status and were away a certain amount away from your work site where it would be physically impossible for you to bring your own lunch, then certainly it would be reimbursed. But if as whoever is working on those, if you're interested in me sending over whatever the federal stuff is, just especially because there's established reimbursement rates and stuff like that, so we would have, sure, at least a dollar figure we could point to and say somebody figured out this is a reasonable price for lunch in our geographic area, and we could cap the reimbursement at that and stuff like that too.
I'll just add one thing to that. What we typically do is if an employee travels away, say Twin Falls, Idaho Falls, and there's an overnight stay for a conference, what we do bounce off the IRS per diem rates by locale that they've already done the legwork on and calculated. Mm-hmm. So we have employees stay within that bound as far as dollar wise goes per day. So that it does work pretty well. So.
Okay, more questions?
If nothing further, Mayor, I would move we approve the consent agenda as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. We approve the consent agenda as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. Motion carried. Okay, the next item is Philip Bowman from Ada County Highway District. Concept study overview of Linder and Deer Flat intersections with recommendations. Welcome. Philip, if you'd identify yourself for our clerk before you begin your speech.
Sure. Philip Bowman, Ada County Highway District, project manager.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Nelson, city council members. I'm here to speak tonight about one of our projects here within CUNA. It's the Linder Road and Deer Flat Road intersection project. I do want to start by apologizing. I had intended to bring some slides with me, and I forgot my thumb drive on my computer at my office, so I don't have the nice slides, but I did have a printout, and Chris was helpful in making some copies for you and some of the staff to follow along. So unfortunately, as I said, I forgot that thumb drive, and we'll just go off this handout instead. So just quickly, a little bit of background on this project. This project did originate as a City of CUNA request, and ACHD and CUNA worked together on an original grant application for federal funding in early 2012. And that grant specifically outlined improvements as needed for the intersection, primarily for safety of both pedestrians and motorists. There was identified higher crash rates at that intersection, and so the original grant application also spoke specifically about the implementation of a roundabout at that intersection. I'll touch on that as we move forward a little bit, that a roundabout was included in our evaluation. ACHD then moved forward and executed a state and local agreement with ITD to get the federal funding for the project. So we are getting federal funding on this project, and it is programmed in ACHD's integrated five-year work plan currently. And again, with the federal funding that comes with the project, we do have some process and guidelines that we need to follow to be eligible for that federal funding. So I'll touch on some of those points as well. On the next slide, one of the requirements that we do go through with our federal funding process is seeking public input throughout the process. So we started our public input for this particular project with an online survey. We conducted that online survey in August of 2014, and we had 280 responses. And of those responses, three major factors that we asked folks that participated in the survey to identify was what they felt the three most significant factors were for consideration of improvement of the intersection. And the top three rated were safety, improving traffic flow, and pedestrian facilities, and specifically the connection of the improvement of the intersection to make connections to existing pedestrian facilities in some of the areas around the intersection. So I apologize that that slide has a little more information that would have shown up a lot better on the screen. And I apologize, can't see all the factors, but there were a number of factors that we gave people an option or the ability to rate, and those were the top three that came out from that online survey. Again, on the next slide, the second phase of our public involvement process was to have an open house, and we held our open house on November 6th at Reed Elementary School, which was very close to the intersection in question. At that open house, we had 46 people attend and sign in, and we received 43 written comment forms. And of the people that filled out the comment form, alternative one was the preferred alternative at that open house. And so the table I provided there shows that approximately 58% of those folks that filled out the written comment form identified alternative one, which is a signalized intersection, as the preferred alternative. Additional comments we got at the open house were, again, centered around pedestrian safety, and a lot of folks specifically cited the safety of younger children and school-age children using the sidewalks in the area. And then also concerns about young drivers using the intersection, and specifically high school age drivers going to and from Kuna High School in the morning and PM timeframes. And then also, again, the theme of improving sidewalk connectivity in the area. That was a common theme in a lot of the responses we received. So based on that public involvement, the ACHD project team did develop two alternatives. As part of our federal process, we need to analyze a number of alternatives for these projects. In this particular case, we analyzed a total of three alternatives. The first one is the signalized intersection, which would be improvements to the intersection in much the same manner as what's there today, a signalized traffic signal controlled intersection. Alternative two that we examined was the roundabout that was originally identified in the grant application in 2012. And then alternative three is called the no-build alternative, or no-build option, and that's a requirement of the federal aid process. And so we did examine making no changes to the existing intersection, and what we found there is that the existing intersection will not meet the future traffic projections for that intersection. The traffic counts get too high, and that future intersection will fail at that outer time limit of our future projections for traffic in the area. So based on those alternatives, our project team did meet on January 22nd and took into account all of the public input that was received, both on the online survey and the open house. We also reviewed our construction and right-of-way costs that were estimated for both alternative one and alternative two, and we used approximately 11 factors that we rated each of the alternatives on. And in the end, our project team reached a team consensus that alternative one should be our preferred alternative. So what that means is we would prepare our concept report for submittal to ITD with alternative one, the signalized intersection, as our preferred alternative. So on the final slide, again, I apologize, some of that information might be difficult to read, but our next steps in the process is I will be presenting information to our ACHD commissioners tomorrow at a work session, and also on Wednesday, February 25th, to ask for their direction on how the project team should proceed with the preferred alternative, whether they agree with our team recommendation or want to give us direction to go in another, to use alternative two, or look at, additional options if they so direct us. But based on that meeting, we're planning to move forward with alternative one as a preferred alternative, and upon receiving that direction, we'll prepare our concept report for submittal to ITD. That, again, is part of our federal aid process, and we're planning to submit that to ITD in early March. And the big push for us to get that concept report approved is we want to have a coordination meeting with Compass for the funding of the actual construction of the project. We're trying to get on an agenda spot with Compass for April 16th, where we could actually get the project program for construction. Right now, the construction year is unknown. It's in a status of PD, which is some future year, but not a firm fiscal year of programming. And we're hoping at that April 16th meeting with Compass, we'll be able to program the actual construction of the project in a fiscal year sometime between possibly as early as 2017 and maybe as late as 2020 is kind of the general time frame we think it'll fit in. But with the concept report approved before that meeting, that allows Compass to program that fiscal year of construction. And then ultimately, with all those dominoes falling, we'll be able to start our preliminary and final design yet this year and be ready for right-of-way acquisition in 2016. So we do see a very reasonable path forward. We think we've heard the public comments received during our online survey and open house, and are in line with the public input of alternative one being preferred by the public, and our project team was unanimous in that decision as well. So I just wanted to bring you all up to speed and answer any questions you had.
Okay, thank you. I have a question, because I understand there's some of the business community that is in that vicinity were apparently hadn't gone to the work sessions and were, I think they were saying they'd like to do nothing. The intersection is fine, except that we have our police chief here, and you know, that is the most heavily involved corner or intersection, has more wrecks than any other place in town. And so, you know, I don't know that the businessman that mentioned that really had looked at the statistics on that intersection. And so, what is it, are you going to acquire enough property to enlarge that intersection that it's scaring businessmen on, especially that shop or Chevron and that group?
Yeah. So what we've been in discussions with some of those business owners as well, we met with a couple of individuals on Friday afternoon and visited about specifically about Alternative One. And the current concern they've expressed to us is the placement of medians on both the west leg of the intersection, which would be the Deer Flat leg, and to the west of the intersection, and then also on the north leg of the intersection, which would be the Linder into the north, Linder along Linder Road into the north of the intersection. And those medians are part of the design to help protect the left turn cues for the new left turn lanes or lengthen left turn lanes, and they present or they prevent, excuse me, conflicts in that future condition of, you know, people trying to turn across those left turn cues. So the specific issue is that the medians would limit the access options to those two existing access points. The current access point off of Linder is right now, today, functioning as a full access, so folks can turn into or out of that access point in any direction. They can turn left out, they can turn left in. When our project is complete, that access would be limited to a right in, right out only movement, and that would be limited due to the placement of a curb median to help protect those left turn queue lengths at that leg of the intersection. The same condition generally exists on the Deer Flat access as well, with the exception that access is currently a left in only. It does not have the ability for folks leaving the site there on the Deer Flat to turn left out and go eastbound on Deer Flat. There is an existing median and an existing access limitation. So again, with the implementation of the project is currently planned at this concept level, that access would be limited as well to a right in, right out. I think one thing I've tried to convey to the individuals when we met with them on Friday is this is a concept level at this point. We'll be looking very closely at the need for those medians and the exact length of those medians when we get into our preliminary design and have more information available to make a better informed decision at that time. But at the concept level, based on our traffic projections and the queue links, specifically the queue links for those two left turn lanes, those medians are shown on our concept plans right now, and they truly do represent the worst case scenario. And we'll be looking at that very closely as we move forward. But as I've become aware of it in our meetings on Friday, the big concern that those business owners have is the placement of those medians and the restriction of those access.
So that's the major thing, was the left-hand turn, that it wasn't a concern of it being enlarged where it took some of their property or something?
No, in that particular quadrant where the businesses are, through that development approval, we actually do have the bulk of our right-of-way maintained or protected there, so we won't be, I can't say that we've fully identified all the right-of-way or the specific acquisition needs yet, but in that general quadrant, we have, through those previous development approvals, been able to kind of set aside, if you will, the right-of-way needs. There's no buildings or anything of that nature impacted on that quadrant of the intersection. Okay. We do know we'll have some right-of-way impacts on other quadrants of the intersection, though, on the northeast and southeast quadrants in specific.
All right, thank you. Questions of the council?
Mayor, I had a question. Is there going to be more public input on that? So
yes, sir. Our plan is to, again, if everything goes as I've outlined and we start our preliminary design, our plan is to have another open house meeting at that preliminary design stage to show everyone what our design is shaping up to be. We'll have a lot more detail known at that time and also accept comments at that time so that if there are some points brought up that we can address, we can still make those changes before going to final design. But I would anticipate that we're going to be doing that preliminary design through the summer of this year. So I think a reasonable expectation is that we'll be having that open house maybe late summer timeframe. We haven't worked out that exact schedule with our consultant yet, but I mean, in general terms, it would be after our preliminary design is complete. And my guess is that will be, you know, within 3 to 4 months. So maybe summer timeframe after we get through the ITD approvals of the concept report and whatnot.
And I assume as you being project manager, you're going to be involved in that.
Yep.
I mean, the only concern that I can see is that the limit of northbound lender traffic out of that area, mm-hmm. that they're going to have to go up to Trophy Street, which is, there's a daycare right on that corner there, and that's going to increase traffic in front of that daycare.
And it's right where kids are crossing the street after school.
Yeah, and there's no light there at coming out of Reed. Mm-hmm. So I just you're going to put up more traffic going that way if they put the median the way they are. And then do you happen to know what time that public hearing is on the 25th by chance?
Our meeting on the 25th, the ACHD commission meeting, starts at 6 p.m.
6 p.m. Okay.
We're not the first item on the agenda, but it will be a public hearing, and so folks will have the opportunity to comment and support or disapproval of the project.
Okay.
So
great, thank you.
You bet.
Further questions?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Bowman, when this had first come up, there was a lot of concern about the safety of a roundabout as opposed to a signalized intersection, and it kind of seemed like the consensus was that the roundabouts were pretty safe, and it was that kind of a sentiment that was portrayed to the people at the meetings, or?
So
how much resistance was there to that? Because I know you look at a roundabout and you think there's no possible way that can be safer than cars stopping and you getting mm-hmm. to go across. And in that situation where it's cars coming from high school and a lot of young kids for pedestrians across mm-hmm. here, that's also been kind of my concern for that. But
yeah, it is relatively well recognized that roundabouts are safer for vehicle collisions. The bulk of accidents that occur in a roundabout are of a sideswipe nature, so it is well documented that for the motorists and the vehicles, they're a safer treatment. The thing our project team did struggle with, specific to this situation on multi-lane roundabouts, is what the traffic needs would require here is a multi-lane roundabout. And the thing we struggled with is it's not well documented. We can't find too much documentation of pedestrian safety on multi-lane roundabouts. And so one of the big themes that we got out of the public comment from both the open house and the online survey was the concern of a high number of young pedestrians, school-age children, using a roundabout, and especially a multi-lane roundabout, and would that be difficult for them to navigate? We We did specifically get one comment from the principal at Reed Elementary that said if the roundabout were the preferred alternative and moved forward, that he felt he would need to provide four crossing guards at a roundabout, where he felt he could provide two crossing guards for the signalized intersection. So our team, our project team, did consider that, his preference was the signalized intersection. But really what we came back to was simply we can't find good examples of a multi-lane roundabout and how pedestrian safety is working on those. There is better documentation of the performance of single lane roundabouts being safe for pedestrians, but the multi-lanes is somewhat unknown, and we just couldn't find good documentation. And that was a specific point that our project team discussed, is not having some case studies to point to and say this really does work well here or it doesn't. We felt we might be kind of breaking new ground with a multi-lane roundabout in this type of setting, with the number of especially school age younger children using it.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
You bet.
Further questions?
Mayor?
Yeah.
Mr. Bowman, looking at the schematic for alternate one, it looks like most of the changes are sidewalk, curb, and gutter. It's one of the most prone accident intersections. Other than the medium going north, you already have the one going west. What are you doing? What is Ada County doing to prevent accidents? It looks like it's more pedestrian changes than it is an intersection.
I certainly understand your question. When the overlay in the graphics that you have is done, it does show up as a lot of sidewalk and curb and gutter improvements and whatnot. One thing we are accomplishing with some additional lanes is to separate turning movements fully. Right now, not all the legs have completely separated turning movements. In the future condition, every leg of the intersection will have completely isolated and separated turning movements. So the right turns will be separated completely from the through lanes, and the left turns will be separated completely through lanes. So that's one major point that is accomplished in the end condition. Again, I think there was a little bit of discussion about the crash data and crash analysis. We did have a slide of that nature at our open house, and I apologize, I don't have it with me, but we did find a fair number of rear end collisions on the east leg of Deer Flat, and we think that was a result of those turning movements not being separated from the through lanes in some of those cases. So I think that is one improvement that we will get. Each of the legs in the final condition will have isolated turning movements, so we'll get those turning vehicles out of the through lanes at the intersection.
Are you enlarging that intersection then, or just improving the pavement?
Well, part of our design, we will be looking at pavement analysis to see what makes the most sense for our final pavement design, whether that'll be a concrete intersection or asphalt. But our plans right now are to replace all the pavement out there, not do an addition to existing pavement. We would plan to currently rebuild the full intersection.
Okay, when you say you're gonna rebuild the intersection, are you enlarging that intersection or using what's already there with different pavement markings?
We will be enlarging it. We won't be using the existing pavement that's there. Yes.
So it doesn't show up on the schematic, the enlargement, because you're showing four corners where the sidewalks are enlarged, and that's about it.
Mr. Yeah. Mayor, may I think to answer your question, Richard, if you look, Councilman Cardoza, if you look on eastbound traffic on Deer Flat,
okay,
right now, the right turn movement and the through traffic movement all use the same lane. After the intersection is approved, as the schematic shows, you will now have the right turn traffic in a right-hand lane and the through traffic in its own lane. you get double the impact or double the benefit when you do that, so that both movements don't have to occupy the same lane. And you see, if you see on the eastbound traffic coming in that intersection, also on Deer Flat, you'll see the same treatment occurring there. Whereas there's only one lane now, it now becomes two lanes with a protected right.
Okay, thanks, Gordon. Thank you, Mr. Bowman.
Any other questions? All right.
Mayor, can I mention one thing?
Yes.
This is kind of a good intersection to go to school on, if I could say that. Back when the approvals were given for the various users on that corner, including the business subdivision on that corner, there was decisions made then that are very hard to unscramble now after we get all this volume coming through that intersection. So as we face this same issue in other intersections, we might keep this example well in mind to kind of guide our thoughts and our practices going forward.
Yeah, good point. Yeah. Plus, before you leave, Chief, do you have in mind what the biggest cause of the accidents are? Is it people trying to turn left, or? I hate to put you on the spot.
Well, that's okay.
We haven't talked.
That's okay. Justin Dussault, Chief of Police, for the record. I spoke to all of you guys many times about the concerns I have for that intersection. And as I stand before you, my first and primary duty here is public safety. I understand those businesses need people to be able to come and go freely. I totally support that. But you have an intersection where not only do we have people coming and going from businesses, we also have at least two crossing guards at certain times of the day. We have children from an elementary school, from the high school. We have inexperienced drivers. And quite frankly, we have a lot of people going to work and coming from work. So really, it's the congestion in itself that we have. There's bottlenecked at two different times of the day. You'll get backup all the way from at Reed Elementary, the crossing section there. It'll back up all the way to the intersection. In the morning, when people are trying to get to CUNA High School, it'll back up. So you'll start seeing that happen, and then people get impatient. And when that happens, they don't see everything, and that's when we get some of those rear-end collisions. And quite frankly, you know, we get calls all the time from the crossing guards saying that people blow right through the stop sign, and that could be when a child's in the crosswalk, and there's a lot of children in those crosswalks. So there's a lot of contributing factors that I've noticed, but I know they have a lot of science and a lot of study that goes behind this, but it is absolutely an intersection that has to be addressed, because as we continue to grow and as buildings, whatever they may be, the rec center, other things go in along that, it's going to be even more challenging in the future. So, you know, I would ask that they just do all the research they can and work on that the best they can, because it's a problem now. If we don't do something about it, it's going to be a much worse problem in the future. So does that help a
yes,
little bit?
Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think that we're...
Can I ask one more thing? Sure. I just happen to think of the one thing that I've noticed is just further on down Linder, where the kids cross to go to the school, they push a button which stops the light, and sometimes the crossing guards, it seems like they'll run a group across and come back over, and then almost immediately run another group across and come back over, and then it starts backing up those lanes. Is there some way to coordinate that signal with the other signal so that cars can kind of move for a minute and then let people across? And because that's the one thing that I've really noticed is a problem there is when they start crossing that crosswalk a little further down.
To piggyback on that, even when there's not a crossing guard involved, when that signal gets hit, it stays red for so long that people frequently, they'll just, like, I think people start to wonder, is it going to change back or is it broken? And so then they just go. And I've seen so many people run it because it stays red for, I mean, the kids cross, they could have run back and forth like 10, not even exaggerating, 10 times before it actually goes back. So I think it's a good question.
Yeah. So to that specific question, that style of signal that's there right now is a push button activation, as you stated. In other areas around the county, we have been able to tie those types of pushback button activated signals to, you know, the full traffic signal that's in close proximity. So that's something we can look at during our design process, if we can, you know, make sure they're talking to each other so that the push button activation somewhat cycles correctly with the traffic signal itself. The other issue we have identified there, and it's actually shown on that alternative one concept plan, is when we were out observing the conditions, especially in the AM peak hours when folks were going to school or going to high school or the elementary school and kind of observing the conditions in place now, we think we'll get a lot of benefit by including a right turn lane to the Reed Elementary and remove that movement from the through lane. So we are showing that on our concept plan, and that is our planned northern limits of the project, is that we would do a little bit of widening and carry that widening to the north and create a new right turn lane for Reed Elementary. In addition, I'll just call your attention to the graphic as well. Over on the right-hand side of that graphic, we're also looking at some improvements in the vicinity of the high school for the same reasons. When we were out observing conditions and pedestrian movements in front of the high school, we have currently two crossings there, and it's the two crossings are made necessary by a gap in the sidewalk. So we plan to propose as part of our federal aid and try to get federal money for those improvements, but we plan to propose that as part of our concept study to get that sidewalk gap filled in, and then also create a right turn lane for the first access point to the high school as well. And we think those two things will alleviate some of those same kind of problems and that your police chief cited as well. We observed what's taking place now is the movement into the high school, that right turn, is basically blocking that entire lane. It's not an isolated turn movement, and that's literally backing traffic all the way up into the intersection. So we recognize through this phase of the concept study that those things were intermingled, and we need to address both of those conditions, both the intersection itself and some of these other issues at the proximity, or you know, in the immediate vicinity, at kind of the limits of the project, if you will. So those are two things that we do plan on including, is some improvements around the high school access and some improvements at the Reed Elementary access. But to your specific question, I think there would be an opportunity to get that signal, that push button activated signal, talking with our new signal in the future, and make sure that we have them working together as best possible so they're not functioning independently and creating some of those issues that you brought up.
Thank you.
You bet.
That's all I got.
Okay, anything else? All right, I thank you very much. That's a really problematic intersection. We realize that. And, you know, I think the alternative, your number one, fits with most of the people that have contacted me, that I think some might have grown up in areas with where there was roundabouts, but few of them are real familiar with double lane roundabouts in a high volume, both walking and cars. Yep. So I think probably what you've arrived on fits pretty well with the people that have contacted me.
Great.
So
I'm very glad to hear that. Okay. I'm glad to hear that we're in line with those comments, and also the input we received during both our online survey and our open house.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate you coming. Appreciate what you've told us. And I think some of us will be at the next meeting where this is discussed.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. Welcome you to come if you'd like to make comments or submit comments via letter to our commission in support, or however you feel about the project. We definitely would welcome that.
Okay.
Thanks very much. Appreciate the time this evening.
Next item of business is the consideration to approve resolution R08-2015, authorizing execution of reimbursement agreement with Corey Barton Homes. Gordon.
Mr. Mayor, this is an exercise related to reimbursement for oversizing of pipeline facilities that sometimes is done in connection with the development of a subdivision. Unless you have any specific questions, you can see the amount, $21,480. And it's for an oversized sewer line in Arbor Ridge subdivision.
All right. Are there any questions of Gordon?
Mayor?
Yes.
Gordon, are we looking at the sewer interceptor fees to make sure they coincide with our increases like we do with our city sewer and stuff like that?
Yeah, I sweat over those every year.
Okay.
So, yes.
Great, thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
No, I'd just like to comment, though, that last deal there that kind of graph that explains the sewer pipe size and what was needed and that type of thing, that was very helpful in looking this over. So thank you for that.
All right. Well, we now have before the council resolution authorizing execution of a reimbursement agreement in the amount of $21,482.37 with Corey Barden Homes, Inc., doing business as CBH Homes.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move we approve resolution 08-2015.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve resolution R08-2015. Would you poll the council, please?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones?
Yes.
Councilmember Boobin Vanderhaar?
Yes.
Councilmember Steer?
Yes.
Resolution R08-2015 has been approved and upon publication becomes law. So, is this the end of the agenda? Or am I missing something?
So we got C at the end.
Okay.
R09-2015, maintenance cost for street lighting modification.
Oh, is it?
John Marsh.
Yeah, it looks like it got cut off.
Let me take a look at this
here,
one.
Don't mind.
Okay.
Okay. Mayor and Council, for the record, John Marsh. This is basically following on the coattails of the request we had at the last City Council meeting for a new streetlight. Again, another contact at ACHD, this time it's Tim Kearns. And so this one is at the corner, the intersection of 10 Mile and Boise Street. And there's a visual up there if you're interested. And so what's been proposed or what was requested was from the CUNA Middle School, in that intersection they felt was a little bit unsafe the way the lighting was structured on that intersection. And so currently on that intersection, what you have is on the northwest corner, you have 100-watt high-pressure sodium vapor light. On the northeast corner, you have a 250-watt high-pressure sodium vapor light. And the traffic engineer there at ACHD, what they're recommending, and by the way, both of those are currently lights that are owned by Idaho Power, and the city maintains or pays for the operational costs, so the electricity on those. What they're recommending and what they want to discuss with you and hopefully you will approve is making a change, and that is removing the light, the 250-watt high-pressure sodium light on the northeast corner, and putting in an LED light, a 160-watt, on the opposite side, so this time it would be the southeast corner, and then changing the light on the northwest corner from a 100-watt to a 250-watt high-pressure sodium. So really the only change would be the light on the northwest corner would go from 100 watts to 250 watts, so there'd be a little more power consumption. It would still be owned by Idaho Power. The city would still continue to pay the power consumption fees. The light on the northeast corner would go away, and in its place would be the 160 watt LED light. This would require a new pole and a new light fixture. It would be owned by the city. The city would maintain any need or future maintenance costs of that pole and fixture, and would maintain the or pay for the power consumption costs on that light. And in looking at the numbers and working through it with ACHD, it looks like this configuration would be about a wash as far as operational costs, meaning power consumption costs, as it was before. And in the end, the result would be a safer intersection. This would also give the city another benchmark lighting project to bounce future LED or other light transformations on in the city later. Other than that, that's it. Any questions?
Any questions?
That was the intersection where a kid got hit, I think, last year at some point in time because it was dark, I think. So I think it's certainly appropriate.
Okay.
John, instead of going from the 100 HPS to the 250, why not go 160 on both sides LED?
I asked that on the northwest corner there where you see the yellow. They considered a new pole there with an LED light. However, due to the power lines in that area, they can't do it. It has to remain on an Idaho Power pole. And so it would remain, and Idaho Power, whatever the agreement is with Idaho Power, they won't consider LED lights on their poles. So it has to remain sodium high pressure sodium vapor. And it's not metered. Those Idaho Power lights aren't metered. They're a rate schedule. So we just pay a flat fee, as the LED light would be metered, so we would know its consumption values.
Thank you.
Sure.
So Mayor,
yeah,
that light is on an actual telephone pole and not an actual freestanding pole. Is that
exactly the one on the northwest corner?
Yeah. The one that can't be changed to LED.
Yeah, exactly. And then the new one, the new projected LED, would be its own standalone pole.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any questions?
Further questions? All right. Thank you, John.
Sure.
We have resolution R09-2015. A resolution of the City of Cuna, Idaho, authorizing the City Treasurer to process payment of operation and maintenance costs for a proposed street lighting modification at the intersection of 10 Mile and Boise Street in Cuna.
Mr. Mayor, I move we approve resolution 09-2015.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve resolution R09-2015. Would you please poll the council?
Council President Cardoza?
Yes.
Council Member Jones?
Yes.
Council Member Boobin Vonderhaar?
Yes.
Council Member Steer?
Yes.
Resolution R09-2015 has been passed upon publication becomes law. Now, does that end everybody's?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the end.
That's the end.
Super
Unless
short.
There's any discussion items.
Mayor,
yes.
I'm not sure anybody else has been approached, but there is a gentleman who uses the city park on a wheelchair that has been constantly harassed by the Frisbee players. And a lady came to my office and said she was walking and sat down on a concrete pad, and the Frisbee players came along and told her to get her butt off the concrete. It belonged to the Frisbee players. So it sounds like the Frisbee players need to be spoken to, that it's a city park, not their park. So I've had two episodes of people coming in my office complaining about the Frisbee players. So,
all right,
Chief
Bobby, have you heard? And Bob, you know, the trouble is, I think they may know some of the Frisbee players, but when I walk down there, I don't see many faces that I recognize at all. You know, it's real popular, but.
There's three or four that I see constantly down there, the same ones, but I've never seen them harass anybody, or at least not me, but evidently there's some hard feelings between the gentleman and the wheelchair, so I don't know if it's a mutual antagonistic attitude by both of them, but maybe the police, if they have a chance, might talk to the Frisbee players and ask them to tone it down. I guess it's a city park, not theirs. so.
It might be that we should consider a sign saying, you know, this is multi-use area, and please be courteous, you know, when, you know, I wasn't so courteous before I became aware that they were playing Frisbee, and this kid was walking along, and he dropped this stuff, which I thought just looked like plastic wrappings. So I just walked up to him and was like to pick that up. And he said, I beg your pardon. So then I found out a lot about Frisbee.
That's awesome.
So anyway, if our park staff would kind of make it a point, and maybe we can design a sign at both ends of the course or the middle of it or what have you that reminds people that it is a public park and to be courteous. Okay, would that handle it?
One other question I have, John, on some of the bills that were presented for the Historical Society, some are paid by the grant, and some are assigned to renewal, I think, or can't think of the word.
Building.
They're not consistent, yeah. I guess. You might want to check some of the bills that went to the Historical Society.
Yeah, and that's a good question, very good question. And what that is there were, at the time of budgeting, when the budget was set, there was a grant that hadn't been applied for, hadn't been awarded yet. So there were monies budgeted for that move. In following that, the grant was awarded. So the monies from the grant were spent first, and there's one expenditure line item in that grant is all. It's just a different description. And then after those monies were spent, the budgeted monies were began to be used. So it's a different description, two different funds.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Joe. Okay.
And for the Highway District, I had a lady in a wheelchair that said that, you know, the metal plates that are at each intersection on the sidewalks, that she said she has flipped over on two of them in this town. And I've kind of, as I've been walking, kind of take a look. I don't see any of them with enough angle that it would do that. But this is what this person told me. But she didn't tell me which intersection. But that might be something that all of us keep in mind, that if we have some that are on a angle enough that a wheelchair would flip over, we probably ought to identify those, because that wouldn't be right.
Mayor, so is that a ramp? Are we talking about a ramp or
is it a box? No, it's a metal deal at each intersection, I think, for blind people.
It'd be a yellow dotted.
Yellow dotted. Yeah.
Truncated domes. Okay.
Yeah.
And that's caused her to fall?
Flip over backwards. And yes.
There was one on Boise and Martizan that looked like somebody was plowing snow and ripped it halfway up. And I actually called ACHD about that last week, and they were going to have someone come out and get it fixed. Okay. So that could be the one. It was up a good 3 inches. So I'm sure that good possibility that might be the one
okay.
She's talking about.
What's that location?
Boise and Martizan.
Okay. Well, yeah, it kind of makes sense if they were damaged or thrown up by tree roots or something, yeah. Anyway, I couldn't find any in my walking around that really concerned me. All right, anything else? Then entertain a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Move and second, all in favor, aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.